Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. We have an amazing guest coming on to the show right now. We have Bill Binney. He's the NSA whistleblower. He was actually the one that created the original NSA software that allows us to collect worldwide data and analyze it. But he did it in a very ethical, meaningful way to be able to get at the information that we need our government to get at, you know, terrorists and bad guys, and be able to take them down. Well, his story is very shocking in how they ended up using that software and what they ended up doing to him. And there's a recent movie that Oliver Stone made about his life and his action at NSA and what he did afterwards. It's pretty shocking on what the NSA is doing and how important the money is to the organization and not their competency, and then what they're doing with the data against American citizens. So Bill Binney is going to share that information with us and share more of what maybe you didn't get to see in the movie. The movie's available on Netflix, and I really recommend for people to watch it. But this is a more in-depth look behind the scenes on what really was going on as well. Bill Binney is a hero from my perspective on what he's trying to do. He has 4 lawsuits against the United States government from a privacy standpoint. Snowden's revelations really opened up and got us to understand what was going on. But this even opens it up farther and shows us what's really going on behind the scenes, how they're using this data in ways that is unintended. And Americans are asleep. So many Americans don't care that our privacy is gone. I think Americans should care, and I think they would care if it happened to them. And once their life becomes encumbered and once they can't make a living like they thought, maybe then they will care. But at that point, maybe it's too late. So we need to stand up and make sure that our money is going into spots that are important for it to go to. We need to stop the corruption, the fraud, all the terrible things that are going on, and reflect what we need our communities and society to become. So we are going to talk to Bill Binney about this situation and more. But before I get into that, I want to tell you that I recently had a video taken down by YouTube, my first strike against my account. It was taken down. It was the Las Vegas shooting, and I was giving people a different view into the facts, not the government narrative. We don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. But there are so many citizen journalists that are going in trying to figure out the facts. The problem is nobody trusts the government anymore because we know that they're lying to us. And so we need honest and truthful journalists to come forward and to bring this information to the public. Citizen journalists, people out there trying to figure out what's going on. Truth should never be censored. We should be able to get to the truth. You might not like Robert David Steele, who was the guest I had on my show. A lot of people don't like him personally, but he's another input of information. I don't know what's true, but I do want to hear what he says about truth. There were a lot of great comments that our listeners were making about the truth that I was able to copy and forward to others. And that's what it's about, digging into what really happened, because our country needs everybody to stand up and get to the truth on these matters. We can't let false narratives and corruption lead our country anymore. And so I'm very disappointed in YouTube for taking down that video. I would like to have an explanation as to why it was taken down. If there was something that was done in the video that was inappropriate, then I will come forward publicly and apologize for that if it was really inappropriate. But if it was just because it was an alternative narrative to the government's, shame on Google for doing that, because that's our First Amendment right. That's why we have free journalism. So now I want to get into a really important interview that I did with Bill Binney. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
All right. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
I'm really excited to have you. You are one of the main characters that I want to talk to. You recently did a movie by Oliver Stone, or you were the center of the movie. Yeah. And it had to do with your involvement in the NSA. How accurate was the movie? And, you know, is there, they can't get into all the details. So did you feel the movie was pretty accurate on what was going on?
Absolutely. I mean, they were just reenacting some of the things I'd told them, experiences I'd had there. So it was pretty accurate. I didn't quite look the way they did in my younger years, but I was close. I was very close, you know. So otherwise, it was accurate. Yeah. Well, there were a lot of things they had to cut out of it that also were scenes that would have been, in my view, of course, from a technician standpoint, into something that would be for technical people, something they'd like to see. But so they had to cut that out to keep the theme of the movie going. But it turned out, I thought, pretty good. It carried basically the struggle of someone trying to initiate change in an organization and being resisted virtually all the way.
Yeah, creating change is something that's really difficult. And I think that is really the crux of what's going on in our country. You know, it's manifesting itself in so many different ways. And when you try to create change, you can get some really irrational behavior, which is what we're seeing. And it comes out as all sorts of bad things. But I think you're right. I think the crux of all this stuff is the change deal. But you wrote a software program that was extremely powerful. Can you explain what it did?
It's fundamentally the whole idea of the program was to be able to manage any amount of data, and in fact manage the world's data by being able to look into it to see and find the things that were necessary for your analysts, our analysts, to be able to look at to see what criminals around the world, criminal groups and governments and militaries and any potential adversaries were doing. And once you looked into that, be able to pull only that material out. So it was a smart selection of data, not just bulk collection. It was smart selection based on the knowledge of the targets involved. And so you gave everybody privacy at the same time, because you didn't take, if you weren't doing anything relevant to the targets you were after, the criminals and so on, your data wasn't even taken in. And that was the vast majority. It was like 99.999999% of the data wasn't taken in. So they wouldn't have any opportunity to abuse it, because they wouldn't have it.
Well, isn't it true that there's so much data that's taken in that it's impossible to actually analyze it? And so your software did some techniques to be able to weed out things very quickly and get to the source really quickly.
Yeah, the point about it was, you didn't look at the content of the data, because if you did, there's just too much of it. You get lost and buried, which is what fundamentally they're doing now. That's why they can't stop any terrorist attacks or be smart about international actions of other countries, because they can't see them coming. They can't. There's just too much data for them to be able to see it in advance. And so we used metadata basically as a way of being able to define what in that flow of information we really needed to pull out for our analysts to look at to be able to stop things like terrorist attacks or smuggling dope, smuggling weapons, you know, any kind of international crime or threats from other militaries and so on.
So they're, for lack of a better word, they're being stupid. They're not using, excuse me, they're being stupid, and they're not using intelligent software to be able to get at what they need to get to, even though they have the tools to be able to do it. Now, do you believe that's on purpose or just incompetence?
No, it was done because they wanted to build a big empire, a large budget, and to do bulk acquisition of data on the planet costs a lot of money too. It's not a cheap process. What we did was a very disciplined, professional, focused attack on the data and information, and that didn't cost anywhere near as much money. So
in the long run, they're undermining their empire because they're incompetent, and they're not getting to the data that they need to be able to do the tasks that they need to do. So their whole goal is to get more money and to build the empire at the expense of actually doing the job that they're tasked to do by the American people, or by their, so much of their stuff is black budget. American people don't even know what they're doing, but by what Congress and their mission and goals are.
Yeah, and basically I looked at it as a swindle, because you have to give up privacy to get security. That's false. And it just led to a bulk acquisition of data, and the consequence of that was to see there's an ever-increasing amount of data in the world year after year. It's ever-increasing, and so that means you're locking the government into an ever-increasing budget to keep up with the collection of all that data. And in the end, what that means is you can't stop anything, you can't see anything coming, you can't prevent the threats. So fundamentally, what that means is people have to die to keep that process going.
So now, what are they doing with the data right now, other than collecting it and getting mass amounts of money for it? Are they using it for nefarious activities, or are they actually trying to do something? They're just not competent at it.
Actually, they are using it in various ways. The IRS has access through this data too, through the DEA and their SOD, the Special Active Operations Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration. They've looked in it, for example, at the Tea Party, all the social networking of the Tea Party is there. And if anybody wants to get 501c3 status with the IRS, they are associated with the Tea Party, the IRS will know it immediately. And so, and that same is true with religious organizations. Excuse me. And they've used it against Jim Rosen, the Associated Press, to silence and threaten the press. They've also used it against other people. I maintain they used it against Elliot Spitzer to stop him from going after the bankers for defrauding people in the 2007-2008 financial crisis.
So forget national security. They're not using it for that purpose. They're using it to just get at their political opponents.
Well, and the FBI uses it for Drug Enforcement Administration. They use it for criminal activity, common crimes inside the United States. Except when they do that, they can't introduce that data into a court of law to prosecute them. So they have to do a parallel construction, means they create the data that would justify the warrant, the arrest, and the warrant, and then they use that data in a court of law. So it's perjury. So they perjure themselves in a court of law.
So although I am for them using data to get at criminals, they're doing it in a way that's not legal.
Yeah, it's not constitutional. It's a violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. It's also a violation of the First, Fifth, and Sixth when you go into court and use it as testimony against themselves. You know, it's a violation of the Fifth Amendment. And then perjuring themselves by substituting data in the court for the real data they used is a violation of due process under the Sixth Amendment. So, you know, they're just scrapping the Constitution, and those are supposed to be the fundamental principles of our nation.
Yeah, it's actually really disturbing. It's disturbing on so many levels that this is going on. So getting to your budget, there were some interesting things in the movie about the budget, and they learned that your software was very powerful, and they gave you more money to build out this program. And then some interesting things occurred. Can you explain what happened?
Yes. Well, it went like this. Transformation Office at NSA came down and offered me something like, at the start, it was $1.2 billion to implement this program that we developed, Thin Thread, across the entire NSA structure, all the field sites and everything. And so when we figured out that it would only cost, we could only spend about a little over $300 million and do it all, they said, that's really great. And then it came back and offered us $1.4 billion. You know, so it's up to the money they were going to give me. So we didn't have any idea how we were going to spend it. We'd have to, you know, find some way to do that. But certainly for much less than what they were offering, we could, in fact, upgrade the entire world for NSA, even all the facilities back here in the United States. You know, and so we could, what it was fundamentally substituting the software we had developed for the software that existed already in deployed sites. When you did that, it just fundamentally upgraded their capacity and capability by orders of magnitude. And so that was more or less a problem of downloading electronically, remotely, not a question of actually physically sending people or hardware anywhere, just using the existing hardware and just automatically, remotely downloading our software onto that deployed software. Hardware.
You were too competent. You knew what you were doing. Okay, so How much money do you think the NSA could save if they didn't have this kind of attitude that perforates throughout the entire organization?
Well, I mean, I would guess that if their budget exceeds $6 or $7 billion, then that's a waste of money. So I think it's running on the order of somewhere between $10 and $15 billion now,
okay,
a year.
Well, it would be really nice to be able to take that $4 to $9 billion and be able to, you know, allocate it somewhere else in society that really needs it, because we have a lot of issues.
Yeah, or else not add it to the deficit.
Yeah, or do something else. Yeah, or reduce our debt. Okay, so your software could have stopped 9/11 from occurring, but it was shut down before the event. Why did you think they shut it down? And can you explain that a little bit? Because that's a big deal.
Well, you see, the problem was this. General Hayden had a program called Trailblazer he was sponsoring, and he was requesting close to $4 billion as the first set of money to go to it. And if you allowed a program like we had to be deployed for just a little over $300 million, it would take away the reason and justification and the problem set for requesting all those billions. So if you do that, you see, if you allowed it to be deployed and used, you would take away the basis for your request for money. And so it had to go. We even knew at the time, from members of staffs on the intelligence committees in the House, that companies that were trying to feed on that money were in fact down in those committees lobbying to get our program Thin Thread canceled internally in NSA. So it was the companies and the management who were wanting to get rid of us. So
it didn't matter what it did. It was all about the money. So did they know at the time when they were shutting this down what they were shutting down?
Yes. In fact, we had briefed even Bill Black, the former deputy director, Hayden's deputy director, on what the whole program did. And we showed him how it was operating, because it was running 24 hours a day in remotely from our site there in the SARC, the Signal Automation Research Center. We were running it all remotely without people. So
shutting you down, we would be vulnerable everywhere. And it was all because that we had some lobbyists and people who wanted the money, and they didn't care if they were, removing their ability to do something that we needed.
Yes, and if you if you went to NSA, you could go down the National Business Parkway, which is right across from on the other side of the parkway from NSA headquarters, and you could see all the companies that have grown up since 9/11. They're all lined up there, about 30 buildings or something like that. Or you can go into Google Earth and see them, see the buildings by even at the street level. You can see all the buildings that were there. There's also other sets of buildings at Friendship Airport and around the states, and also around the world from all this contracting money that's been pushed into NSA after 9/11.
So what do they use your software for now? Because they didn't totally get rid of it, right? After you ended up leaving when they shut that down, right?
Yeah, well, I left shortly after that because they took the software we had. And see, on our part up front, we had a filtering process that looked only at data that was relevant to targets we were working. And we only pulled that data out and let everything else go by. But in the process of being able to find that data, we had to be able to look at everything. So that meant we could see all this data. And that meant also we could, if they removed the filtering, they could take all that data in. So it was then a question of just doing bulk acquisition instead of doing smart selection of data. That was the first thing they eliminated.
Okay, and that they did without congressional approval or any knowledge by our politicians.
There were four politicians briefed in it on this by Cheney and his people, and I think General Hayden did the briefing or part of it at least, and those were the chairman and ranking member of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. That was Porter Goss and Nancy Pelosi on the House side, and Shelby and Graham, I think, on the Senate side. they were briefed on, I think it was the 4th of October of 2001.
Now, so that was was that constitutional at the time? Could they have done that?
Of course not. I mean, it was a violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And even in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in 2014, they ruled, or 2015, 7th of May, they ruled that that was just the bulk acquisition of metadata with the business records was illegal. So, I mean, knew that was that way, and that's why they kept it all secret.
And they lied in congressional sessions, right?
Yeah, well, even from the members of Congress, they kept it secret. So there were only four to begin with to know about it.
Do you know what the ramifications could be to those people who broke the law?
Well, they should be in jail. They're criminals.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I want to hear. So since then, they've expanded your use and your program. As far as you know, it has never been, held back. It's just expanded. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and the first targets are, of course, the citizens of the United States. We were the first ones because we were the closest. So that was the first time they opened up the floodgates of bulk collection of not just metadata but content. And so we were the first ones in the pits. Then the rest of the world joined us shortly thereafter. I think by the fall of 2002, they were pretty well deployed around the world collecting data on virtually.
And Snowden came out, and that's when we learned about all this stuff, and it was based on your software. Now, since then, they've gotten in front of Congress and talked about how they're cutting all that back and they're doing things. Are they just lying again? I mean, they have a pattern of lying and not telling the public the truth. Why would we believe them now?
You can't. I mean, no government can really trust any intelligence agency they create because they do everything behind closed doors in secret. And one of the main problems is that the NSA is not audited by any government department, like the Government Accounting Office doesn't audit them. And also, they have no way of verifying anything that NSA is doing. No, Congress and the courts have no way of doing that. Even after the Snowden material came out, Judge Reggie Walton, who used to be the senior judge on the FISA court, came out and said and admitted that the court has a limited capacity to even verify anything they're saying. Well, they don't have a limited capacity. They don't have any capacity. All they can do is say you need to dot this I, cross that T, and fill out this form. That's all they can do.
We have a rogue organization that can do whatever they want. They can commit murder on a daily basis, and we don't know and can't do anything about it.
Mostly you don't know what they're doing, that's all.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. You don't want to say they're committing murder because that sounds so bad and we're accusing somebody of something that we don't know about. But the point is, they could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So you ended up leaving that organization, and was your job just simply eliminated, or were you just so frustrated that you left?
Well, I mean, what they wanted to do was when they wanted to get rid of the Thin Thread program, they of course had to get rid of us. So they basically put us over in a corner. So somebody else took the job that I had, I guess. So I didn't stick around to find out, because once I found out they were collecting all this data on U.S. citizens, I said, I'm out. I can't be associated with this.
And at that point, you went on and you did some private companies and you were trying to make a living and do some good work. Can you explain what happened next? Because this is pretty interesting as well.
Well, a whole series of things happened. One of the staff member on the Senate Intelligence Committee asked us to go talk to the NRO and work with them on a program over there, which we did. And then when NSA found out about the fact that we were doing that, they got the entire program canceled.
And what was their reasoning, or did they never give you a reason?
Oh, they never gave a reason.
They don't have to.
They just didn't want that happening there. In fact, they didn't want the processes we wanted to develop and implement there in NSA. They didn't want those anywhere in the government.
Okay, well, so now what were those processes? Basically, the processes to only look at the data that's relevant.
Yeah, to do a focused attack to be successful, because if you get success there and they fail on this bulk side, it's going to look really bad on their bulk activity. And why should the government pay so many more billions a year for their bulk approach than a couple of hundred million, you know?
Is it just the money, or is it also the power to manipulate and control the people of the United States?
That's the other one of the side benefits from their perspective they get is they have information on everybody. That gives them power over everybody. Not just members of standard public, members of the public, but also all the members of the House and Senate, all the members on the FISA courts and the Supreme Court, all the federal judges, anybody in the country, really, they have information and knowledge about. So they can use it. That's one of the reasons I thought that's why I imply they went after Eliot Spitzer, because he was trying to do something that was trying to go use the law to go against people who defrauded people. And they wanted, that was their bankers, and they wanted that not to happen.
Well, how much of the information, they go after people with information and they can get at anybody, but how much of it can they just make up? Because how do we know?
That's another point when you have the data like that, you have the opportunity to manipulate it if you so desire. You can change that and make it look like that was the way it was originally sent. So that's possible to do. Whether or not they're doing that, I don't know. But
well, they can't be audited, so we have no idea.
We just can't verify, yeah.
So you were blocked from doing work. Now, are you you're in another country right now. Are you in another country for a reason, or can you come back to the United States safely?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't have any problem traveling. I'm here because we're forming a new company here now. I'm a member of a new company forming up here in Amsterdam. And so we're going to do basically the job the right way and give security and privacy and succeed by focusing and doing a professional job like we should have been doing all along.
Now, who are you going to be giving your services to, or not giving? Who are you going to be working for, or who do you expect your clients to be?
Primarily it's the EU government, their parliament. I mean, they're sponsoring a lot of this. We're advising some of them. Last month, went to Vienna to give a presentation against the bulk acquisition law that was going to be introduced and voted on in Austria. And after that, I mean, I guess we helped out in terms of that. Some lawyers in Vienna had asked us to come and help them talk about this, which we did. There's Aaron Campos and myself, and we went down there, and the results fundamentally, I hope we contribute them anyway. The result was the Supreme Court in Vienna in Austria voted that was an unconstitutional act, that they couldn't do that and conform to their constitution. And almost all the entire parliament in Austria voted against it. And so it failed there. The only ones left there were conservatives on the one side voting for it. Everyone else went against it. So they lost in the court. So that bill is dead in Austria. So that's like the first domino to fall, the first government to recognize the fallacy of doing this, because it makes your analysts dysfunctional. You can't see the targets. So doing it for that reason alone is not the right path to take. But the fact that it's unconstitutional, a violation of everybody's privacy, is the other problem with it. So, you know, and it gives a power to the central government that may or may not misuse it. At a minimum, it's available for them to do that.
Well,
and that shouldn't be possible either.
From an ethics standpoint, it goes against your human rights, your born rights. And that was pretty established years ago in the legal profession. So are the EU politicians responding really well to you? Do they understand what's going on? Are they responding to you better than the US politicians are?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they are now have issued a new law. GDPR is going to be implemented, I guess, by May of next year sometime. And it's required. There are certain requirements for it to ensure the privacy of European Union citizens.
So the rest of the world is starting to take notice and realizing how bad this is and starting to put tools in place to fix and remedy this. But the United States politicians, are they scared, or are they willfully ignoring it? Is it cognitive dissonance? What is it?
Well, I can't really be sure. I just think they're probably so afraid that they'll miss something by not taking in everything, that they think that taking in everything is the right way to go. I think that's part of the mentality.
Is it because that's what they're told?
Yeah, well, that's part of it, because they don't the intelligence agencies and the businesses that are supporting them tell them that's the only way to do it. I mean, that's the way they advocate, because that gives them a lot more money to feed on. I call that the happiness management program. You know, where certain people are happy because all the money is flowing their way.
And they've been missing a lot of important events, right? 9/11 was one of the biggest ones, but do you think they missed 9/11 on purpose? I mean, there's so much evidence that 9/11 was not quite what they said it was. So maybe they didn't want you to find 9/11 and didn't want all that information.
Well, see, it's not just 9/11. I would say every terrorist attack since 9/11 and before, it's the same. I mean, it's the same process. If you were focusing, you should have been able to stop these, all of them. And yeah, it's a question of them. I used to think when I was working in NSA that the vision statement for companies that had contracts with NSA was to aim low and miss, simply because they never succeeded at them. But it really turned out, in my view anyway, toward the end there, before I left, that their true vision statement is keep the problem going so the money keeps flowing.
And what gives you that? Why do you think that? And specifically, can you give us some things that have happened? I mean, it's fairly obvious what you're saying seems to be true, but can you give us some specifics that, what led you to that conclusion?
Well, is every contract I've ever been involved with or knew about at NSA, the contractors only looked for a small incremental improvement year by year so that they can keep getting the contracts year after year. So you'd only make a little bit of change because they didn't have the vision or capacity to see beyond the end of their nose. Fundamentally, they were looking at, if I only do this much, I can drag this out for years and years, and I can make a lot of money over time doing this. But if I solve it all at once, what am I going to do after that? Well, they couldn't see the opportunities beyond that. That was part of their problem. So
you came to a conclusion. It wasn't incompetence. Obviously, there's a lot of incompetence around, but it was so much incompetence that it had to be on purpose.
Yeah, it was by design.
Okay. So do you know what they're doing now?
They're continuing. I mean, everything I've seen in terms of the material from Edward Snowden, saying they haven't done very much at all beyond what we left them when we all left in October 2001. They haven't really made any substantive improvements. And I think they started to recognize that by the White House Big Data Initiative issued in 2012, asking or soliciting industry to come up with algorithms that could go into large data sets and figure out what was important in that for people to look at. That's kind of an open admission that they're failing at being able to do or find anything meaningful in the data they've collected, in this bulk acquisition business. I mean, most of the people in Congress will say we need to collect more intelligence. So they're referring to data collection as intelligence, and that's it's giving everybody the wrong impression. That's not intelligence. That's just data information. So you only have intelligence when you understand what you've collected, and they don't have that.
Well, and they don't understand computer science and data information analysis. So we have kind of a general ignorance on Capitol Hill, but they are getting the information that the IRS needs to be able to go after their political enemies. So,
yeah, and see, the point is if you know who your enemy is inside the United States politically, then you can target them with this bulk acquisition, because bulk acquisition is on everybody, but you can certainly go after specific people if you know who you want to get. So that's not a problem. The problem is recognizing the threat that could be anywhere in the massive amounts of data that you've picked up, as you've acquired and stored. I mean, that's really the problem. How can you find that? And that's what we were saying, you had to do a focused, directed, targeted, disciplined approach to find that. And that's what they refused to adopt.
Well, so we have evidence that they went after Tea Party organizations. They've gone after religious organizations. Where do you think the country is going to go as they're targeting these specific groups? They're not targeting everybody. It's only certain people's political enemies.
Yeah, well, you see, that's a problem I see. If they don't start focusing in on implementing and executing the law properly, that is, when people do that, they have to be held accountable. If you don't hold them accountable, then that gives them a green light to do anything they want, which means you never know what they're going to do next. I mean, if they just have the swindle at a certain level now, it could be even more expensive to the public, and more people can suffer as a consequence of that. So it's just something you have to hold their feet to the fire and hold them accountable. Otherwise, this is abuse of data and information against people is not going to stop.
Well, why do they say they need to be run freely with no auditing and they can do whatever they want? How can we be so gullible to think that that is an okay situation? I mean, how did they get to that point?
Well, first of all, some of the agencies were just created without any knowledge of Congress. It was done by executive order, like, for example, NSA. President Truman created NSA by executive order. Congress, many of the Congress members, even during the Church Committee investigations in the 70s, didn't even know that NSA was an agency of the government. So
that's crazy.
That's how you can do this. And if, for example, the government accounting office doesn't know that you've got an agency over here, they have no idea that they're supposed to even be able to audit it. Not auditing NSA or any of the agencies shouldn't be a problem. I mean, you could clear auditors, go through the clearance process, and they could and then go on and go into those agencies and audit their books. For some reason, they're not allowing that to happen. That's a setup for corruption when you do that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so where are they getting their money? I mean, how is Congress allocating money to them?
It goes through the intelligence committees, who are not the oversight committees. They're the overlook committees, and actually they're advocate committees. And so they prepare the budget, the secret budget for the intelligence agencies and the other budgets for that are open. They have two parts. There's a secret part and a non-secret part, and then they submit that as a part of the federal budget every year. So unless you have a clearance, you can't see what's in the secret budget.
And people are afraid to go. Why would they be afraid to want to start auditing these organizations? I mean, we have a method to be able to do it. It's really important that we do it. So why aren't we doing it? Why would they be afraid to even bring it up?
Well, I maintain there's a lot of corruption involved with this. And so it's a lot of criminality, corruption, fraud, and waste. And if you start auditing, you could find all that. And certainly they wish to avoid exposure. And so they classify all this material. Now, to me, that's a violation of Executive Order 13526, Section 1.7, that says basically you cannot maintain classified, or not declassify information that's evidence of a crime, corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse. And a lot of this, and in the budget area anyway, is that. And so that's really what they're hiding.
So now you've gotten Austria to finally support you. It's a first country. What are your goals? What are you trying to target?
Well, I like to see a privacy given back to the people of the world, not just the United States, but everybody. I mean, because, even these intelligence agencies can't afford to take in all this data, because that means they become dysfunctional too. So it's important that you pull in only relevant data anywhere, not just in the United States, but around the world too. And that's true for all countries. It's not just true for the United States. So, I mean, you can see these attacks continuing. And then when I look at the people again over here in Europe again, when you look at all the individuals that committed these crimes and heinous attacks around Europe, they you go in and you say, well, okay, we knew these were bad people. Well, if you knew they were bad people, you should have been targeting them and only them and watching them very closely. And then maybe you'd have a chance of stopping these attacks and saving people's lives instead of picking up the pieces and the blood and what have you on the street afterward.
I don't even know how they can straight face just not do this. It's mind-boggling to me because we have so much corruption, so much death, so much violence. It's a major issue. It's affecting our communities. And we have solutions and tools at our disposal to start to clean this up, and yet they're not doing it. So to me, that in itself is criminal negligence. But if we could get one country to totally clean up, then the world can look at some bright lights of, you know, some bright shining lights of examples.
That's fundamentally why we're over here in Amsterdam, try to do that. So we can away.
Now, is Amsterdam a country that's interested?
Yes. In fact, the whole European Union has got to begin to start focusing on privacy.
Is there any country over there that's giving you a little bit of backlash?
Not really, no. I mean, I get more support from the people in various countries, more so than others. But there's a general sense that privacy is more important here in Europe than it is in the United States.
Well, I know that Germany, in particular, the Chancellor Merkel was herself was violated her privacy. I would think the Germans would be pretty upset about that and want.
But she already knew about that.
She didn't care?
Well, she basically, and a few members of her government were the ones who were aware, along with the BND, and the Bundestag just recently is finding out about this, that they, in fact, had an agreement with NSA to transfer all the data from Germany over to there, to NSA. So she knew this bulk stuff. She knew this bulk acquisition was going on. So, I mean, if you know bulk acquisition is going on, then you know you're collected.
My understanding is Israel and England have carte blanche access to our data as well. So I would think not only is it a violation of our First Amendment, now we are going way beyond that by giving our data to other countries.
Well, certainly access. What the extent of that access is, I'm not sure, but... there's a potential there and also because of the internet and the way it works, those countries, by participating in this bulk acquisition, have a fairly good, they should be collecting, just because of the routing around the world, certainly a significant amount of data from U.S. citizens.
So sure, on their own.
Yes, and through support that we give them to do this bulk acquisition. So it's not just GCHQ or the Israelis, it's the Five Eyes and a number of other countries in the world, I think seven or eight others.
Which ones are they?
Well, the only ones I know like are Germany and Poland and I think Denmark. I mean, I know some of the material that's coming out shows that Japan's involved. There's some reports that have been released from Edward Snowden that show about five or six others are, but they don't say exactly who those countries are.
Okay, because that would be giving our data using it internally is corruption and horrible, but giving our data and helping other countries use our data, our secret data against citizens, would be treason. I mean, it's at a whole nother level.
Well, so at a cooperative level, that's the agreements they made with those countries to do that. And the other countries query that database using the program X Key Score, which is what one of the ones that Edward Snowden had published from the data he had. Also, another one is called IC Reach. IC Reach is the one involving U.S. CIA, DEA, FBI. By the way, the one point about use internally in the U.S. about for common crimes is that's operated by the FBI, interrogating directly into the NSA databases without any oversight at all from anybody. You haven't heard, and also CIA does that. So you haven't heard anybody talk about either CIA or FBI use of NSA collected data, but they got lines into those cases. They have the direct lines through those programs also to query that database.
Didn't Obama do an executive order allowing all the intelligence agencies to have access to that data?
Yeah, he expanded it beyond CIA and FBI, yeah, to the other the other 14 intelligence agencies.
And he did that right before he left office.
Yeah.
And so was it essentially so they could have access to all the NSA data? Well, they probably wanted to do it to get after Trump and whatever else they're doing, but it was essentially to give them carte blanche access to all the NSA data.
Yeah, and it meant that a lot more people knew what was in the NSA databases. They had that knowledge, and they could interrogate it, query it, and so on, and have it and as a distributed knowledge base that couldn't be hidden. For example, if for whatever reason he wanted to do that, I found that rather amazing myself. I don't think that there's very few agencies who have a need to have that kind of access.
Yeah, why would he, right before he left office, why would he do an executive order like that? And why didn't it raise more red flags?
I really don't know. I mean, it would have raised the red flag with me, but, you know, I'm sure he had his motives. You could think that he was doing that simply to allow his agents and all these agencies to have access to things that they could then look at and leak or whatever at various times. So, I mean, it's possible that's it, but I really, you know, I think he should actually come out and say why he did that. I don't believe he ever did.
No, he didn't. We never got any reason. See, and I think that's so much of the problem is that the government will never come out and give us a straight answer. So nobody trusts the government anymore because we find all these inconsistencies, and nobody will come out and just give us a straight deal and be ethical and honest. And so now we don't trust anybody.
Yeah, I mean, when Obama said he was going to be more transparent than any other administration, I mean, I found him to be the most opaque administration I've ever experienced.
Yeah, he went the exact opposite, and he persecuted more journalists than any president before him.
Yeah. Yeah. And whistleblowers.
Yeah, and whistleblowers, exactly.
Yep.
And now, has Trump done any of that from your understanding yet?
Well, not yet. I mean, I've always thought of him as, since he's not a member of the established political parties, and he's really not a member of the in crowd with the intelligence state or the deep state, if you will, or the shadow government, if you want to refer to it that way. And he's not one who's in it for the money, because he's got a lot of money himself. He doesn't need that. I thought he would be the best opportunity that we'd have to fix this problem. And he's talked about being following the Constitution. Well, if he does that, this has to stop.
Well, do you see him? I mean, I think it would be such a hard job. Do you see him making steps in that direction? Or are you, I mean, what are your thoughts on what's going on?
Well, I haven't seen it yet, but I mean, you know, it takes a long time to really find out what government's all about when you're not familiar with it and you're put in there as the head of it. It takes a long time to figure that out, but I'm still hoping that he'll do something that would get rid of this problem. And I think it means, you know, he has to go around just like he did on his TV show and say, you're fired, you're fired, you're fired, and you're fired. Because these are the people who are, I mean, it's the bureaucrats that are keeping this going.
Now, do you think his safety will be at risk?
I maintain the president's safety is always at risk, and that's why the Secret Service is guarding him. That's their job to make sure they reduce that risk.
And the Secret Service, could they be compromised by the NSA and all these other intelligence agencies that they would not want Trump to make any changes?
I would hope not. I certainly don't think that that's true. I think they're kind of a separate set of organizations. They're not part of the intelligence 16 intelligence groups, so I think they are recipients of some information at times, but I don't believe that they would be compromised that way.
That would be really important.
Certainly hope not. Yeah,
because how else can you get something accomplished with the NSA not being able to be audited, with the NSA having access carte blanche to all the information in the world? And they can do whatever they want under, you know, confidential agreements or whatever else they have going on. If he isn't protected this way and they aren't separate, that's our only chance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how else we'd have a chance. So what are you up to besides what you're doing now as we close this out? What are you up to and what do you want people to know? How can people help you?
Well, I also have supported four separate lawsuits against the United States government for violation of the constitutional rights of all U.S. citizens by doing this bulk collection. And that is currently, I've got one that I'm supporting by the ACLU and in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. I have another one supported by a separate lawyer who's doing it on its own in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and one in by the former mayor of Salt Lake City in the 11th Circuit. Again, it's a constitutional suit against the United States government for a violation of the spy. In that case, it was specifically talking about spying on everyone during the Olympics in Salt Lake City. And then there's the fourth one is in the Ninth Circuit, EFF lawsuit, Juul versus NSA. Again, it's still going on. It's been going on now for close to 10 years, I believe. But it's still progressing. And there are other organizations that I'm part of in the U.S., like whistleblower.org and also exposedfacts.org. Those are the websites for these organizations that are supporting whistleblowers and supporting truth tellers to get the word out to the public, be honest with the public, which is something we're lacking from the mainstream media. They're not really covering this because they're intimidated. I mean, and that was because they went after Jim Risen, Jim Rosen, the Associated Press. They threatened them with grand jury investigations and so on. So, you know, we have to, you know, that those kinds of organizations try and get truth out. And any number of radio shows and cable TV shows have shown that they will stand up and try to get the word out, too. So
how can people support you? If they go to these websites, they sign up for things. Is there anything specifically people can do? Can they donate money? Can they get involved? Well, there's a lot of people that want to help and don't know how.
Well, actually, if people begin to realize that they're the ones with the real power here, what they have to do is call their representatives and senators and say, I'm going to work to fire you and not contribute money, but contribute money to your opponent and get rid of you the next election unless you stop this stuff. And really, in the sense of when they come out for their town meetings, get up, stand up, say something to them openly and kind of embarrass them, you know. So those are the kinds of things that people can do. Otherwise, support these other organizations trying to get the base knowledge out. And also, there'll be another site coming out called BillBinney.com. It'll be out soon. We're going to create that kind of site here in Amsterdam.
Okay, excellent.
So information out there.
Well, thank you so much for the work that you do. Thanks for standing up for everyone and for being a leader in this arena. I know that you're putting yourself at risk, at least your career at risk, and I'm so thankful to you for what you're doing.
Well, thank you.